Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 192, I chat with John Schuerman of Panamorph about aspect ratios and anamorphic lenses. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded January 30th, 2014, episode 192, Aspect Ratios Explained. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the Home Theater Geek and Director of Content at AVSForum.com. This week's guest geek is John Schuerman, a consultant at Panamorph, makers of anamorphic lenses, a term that might scare you, but it needn't, because we're going to explain all about what they do and why they're important. And really what we're talking about today is aspect ratios, a very mysterious subject that will not be mysterious by the end of the show. Hey, John, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Now, you're also a member of AVS Forum. I want to make sure everybody knows that. So those of you who are members of AVS Forum can contact John that way through private messaging and whatever. And John, you do contribute to many threads. I've seen your name up there quite a few times, so I sure do appreciate that.
Yeah, you usually see me in the Constant Height 235 to 1 forum, but I also post in audio too. And yeah, I'm all over, mostly in projection on there, but under my full name. No fancy handles or anything, just my name.
Right, exactly, which should be there on the screen when you're on the screen, so people can get the spelling correct. Those of you who are tuned in live at live.twit.tv or logged into the chat room at irc.twit.tv can post questions for John as we go, and I'll pass along as many as I can.
Cool.
So really the reason that you're here today, John, is because when you watch a movie, typically most Hollywood movies, big blockbuster type movies, and you watch them on a high def TV or a high def projector, you see these black bars on the top and bottom of the image, and everybody hates them. They just can't stand them. And this has to do with aspect ratios. So I wanted to have you on the show to talk about aspect ratios, what they mean, and how can we defeat these black bars.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I want to talk to. I mean, I've been doing trainings on this for years on anamorphic 235 to 1 films. And I usually start with just kind of explaining what an aspect ratio is, because I've found that a lot of people are confused as to what that is. And what you said about black bars is very true. There's a people on AVS Forum may be less likely to hate the black bars than, you know, the typical average Joe consumer. But still, there's a lot of misunderstandings there about why they're there. I've done classes with over 100 people in the room, with industry people, home theater people, even manufacturers reps, and just ask a simple question: how many people here understand why the black bars are there to begin with on a movie? And in a room of over 100 people, I might get four or five hands go up. So I kind of start out with some anamorphic 101. Some of this is probably old hat for AVS Forum members, but I'll cover it kind of briefly and kind of just define some terms, if that's okay.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, if I can bring up image number one, first of all, this is kind of how we define the whole anamorphic or ultra-wide experience. We've been using the term ultra-wide lately because, like you said, the word anamorphic is kind of scary. So this kind of just defines the experience of it. On the left-hand side of the screen, you see a letterboxed image of a 235 to 1 or 240 to 1 movie on a 16:9 screen. And there's those familiar black bars. I actually made them gray because on many displays, they're not actually black. They're gray because the black levels of certain technologies don't quite get you to black. And on the right is what a projection system, an ultra-wide projection system can look like with the same exact movie content. And as we'll be talking about later, there's a couple of different ways you can achieve that. But the main thing, the point with this image here, is what a dramatic difference there is watching a film on an ultra-wide 240 or 235 to 1 screen versus on a regular 16:9. And with a couple of new exceptions from LG and Samsung and another company, the only way to really get this is with projection. So the image is literally 80% larger. There's no fudging the math. There's literally literally 80% larger on the right. And of course, the black bars are gone. So that's the experience we're going to be talking about today and how to achieve that.
So great. If I can go all ears.
Yep. Slide number two, we'll kind of define some terms and we'll get to how we do this here momentarily. So if I can see number two.
There it is.
There we go. Okay. So aspect ratio is actually a very simple concept. All it really has to do with is a relationship of width to height. And 16:9 image, which we're all familiar with because everybody has a flat panel here or just a standard projector, has a 16:9 image, most likely. And all that means is the image is 16 units wide by 9 units tall. But if we were in the motion picture industry, we wouldn't say 16:9. We would call this 1.78:1. And to my way of thinking, that's a more, it's actually an easier to understand way of thinking about that image. What that simply means is that the image is 1.78 times wider than it is tall. And so that makes that, to me, quite simple to understand, is 1.78 times wider than it is tall. You can get the same math about a 16:9, divide 16:9, and you get 1.78. So that's simple aspect ratio. When we're talking about TV, for some reason, we round up the whole numbers, 16:9. In the film industry, we use fractionals, which would be 1.78:1. And so that's where the 16:9 aspect ratio comes from.
Now, in the olden days of TV, the aspect ratio of the screen was more square. Chili in the chat room is saying standard definition 4:3 needs to die. and that's what the aspect ratio of TVs was for like 50 years, right? It was 4:3. Or if you divide 3 into 4, you get 1.33:1. Hey, we're doing some math here, like coding 101 in the last hour.
Yeah, so I kind of visually represent that, and I'll get to some really interesting history here that hopefully the viewers and listeners will find interesting. So if we bring up the next slide, I think it's called 2A. There we go. There's 4:3, and as you just mentioned, that is, if we do the fractional, it's 1.33:1, meaning the image is 1.33 times wider than it is tall. 16:9 is 1.78:1, 1.78 times wider than it is tall. And then the aspect ratio we'll be landing on today, which some people, some companies are referring to now, is 21:9, but that's just another way of saying 2.35:1. And again, I just made this quick chart to see the image. It just means that the image is 2.35 times wider than it is tall. So if we go to next slide, number three, this is where 4:3 comes from. So motion picture film, and even anybody who takes still photography, still images today, even digital stills, most of the time, those are going to have a 1.33:1 aspect ratio because that is the actual shape of 35-millimeter film. That's the actual exposed area on a roll of 35-millimeter film. It's 1.33 times wider than it is tall. And so when television, you know, all your early movies are 1.33:1, not all of them, but the vast majority, are shot this way. And so when TV rolled along in the late 40s and early 50s, they just copied what the movie theaters were doing, copied the same exact aspect ratio, except they renamed it 4:3. But as we just discussed, it's the same thing as 1.33:1. Well, it's just a little simple math will get you there. And so when television rolled along, they just adopted it, and that's how we got 4:3 out of it.
Sounds good to me. I mean, it makes total sense. But I do know that the movie industry kind of has always wanted to differentiate itself in some way to attract people into the theaters, right? Because if they have a 4:3 image on their TV at home, what is going to bring them into the theaters?
Exactly. And we're still dealing with that today. I mean, that's part of what 3D is about, and high frame rate and all these other things are technologies that are at least not yet in the home. Eventually we'll probably see them there, but the theaters always want to be a step ahead. So if we can bring up the next slide, which is number four, Hollywood tried back in the 50s, all kinds of different technologies to get people back into the movie theater. And there was a whole bunch of them. 3D was invented put forth aggressively.
Popularized, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. In the 50s, to get people back into the movie theater. So 3D is nothing new, and anybody who knows any film history may be aware of that. But a lot of people are surprised to hear that 3D is hardly new. Creature from the Black Lagoon was an early black and white 3D movie, and I think it's 1953, 1954, somewhere in there. But anyway, these were all technologies to get people back into the theater because people were staying home. They were staying home and watching TV instead of going to the movie theaters. And theater attendance dropped like 70, 80% during this era. And so Hollywood tried 3D. There was such a thing as smell-o-vision. I'm not making that up. You brought a scratch and sniff card in with you to the movie theater, and you, certain color codes would show up, and you would scratch off the appropriate scent.
No kidding.
Yeah, so it was, how do we get people back into the theater? And what they kind of landed on, and what became popular and is still popular to this day, the one that stuck is the widescreen image. And so basically, it's just like what I showed in the initial slide. It's such a huge, much more immersive image than 4x3 could offer. And if we go to the next slide, yeah, there we go. We're going to try to get this ultra-wide image. Now, the problem here is we want this ultra-wide image put onto the film. But our film frame, as I mentioned earlier, is in that 1.33 to 1 shape, the 4x3 shape. So how do we get a widescreen image onto a 4x3 or 1.33 to 1 aspect ratio film frame? And so one of the ways you could do it is to just expose the middle part of the film frame, but you waste an awful lot of film resolution. There's a 35 millimeter film is inherently a high resolution medium, but if you're only exposing the middle part of the frame, you're wasting a lot of film resolution. And you're
It's like you're burning those black bars, those black letterbox bars, onto the film frames themselves.
That is one way to do it. And the problem is not only is it lower resolution, and if you project that image, it's going to be grainier and soft. You also have the issue that you've got a projector light bulb that literally half of the light output is being blocked. So you end up with a grainy, somewhat dim image. And something I just kind of want to touch on very quickly is the thinking behind widescreen. Now, 3D is obvious. We see with two eyes. We see the world in a 3D fashion. However, as people have realized, and we still hear talk about today, 3D requires glasses. 3D sometimes gives you eye strain. The thinking behind widescreen imagery is that, well, yes, we have two eyes, but they're spaced horizontally, okay? And yep. So we have a much wider field of view than we do vertically. Now, I'm sitting here in my home studio, and I'm looking at the monitor. I'm looking at myself on the monitor right now. But I can see to my right my home theater equipment rack. I can see to my left my acoustic treatment on the wall, even though I'm looking straight ahead. We have very wide peripheral vision, but we're limited in the vertical. So the thinking behind widescreen is let's engage people's peripheral vision, which mimics more how we as human beings see real life, and we will feel that much more immersed in the image. It mimics how our eyes see, and so it's a more realistic, more immersive image. And if you look at the early advertisements for widescreen, which was CinemaScope and Cinerama, they specifically said, you don't need glasses to see this. It's immersive, all those same things. A lot of the catchphrases we use for 3D were also used for widescreen. But you didn't require any special eyewear or eye strain to see this. And that was the idea. Let's give somebody a really wide image. So if we can go to the next slide, I'll show the first way that Hollywood kind of experimented with this. So like I said, the problem is, how do you get a widescreen image on essentially a square piece of film? And Cinerama rolled around in 1952, I believe, and it was an amazing idea. Let's shoot three separate cameras and project with three separate projectors. And you ended up with an aspect ratio that was almost 3 to 1, three times wider than it was tall, not quite that wide. But it was also projected on this enormous wraparound screen. And I remember seeing when I was probably 8 or 9 years old, it was a re-release of This is Cinerama. And the amazing thing about This is Cinerama in 1952, when it was released, it was the top grossing movie of 1952. It's a travelogue. That's all it is. It's a travelogue. They put the camera down the Grand Canyon. They put the camera on a roller coaster. They show people water skiing. And not only was it a travelogue, Top grossing movie in 1952 only played in one movie theater in New York City.
Whoa. Wow. So the top grossing movie of the year, and it was only in one theater in the world.
Yeah, that's right. It only played in one theater. And eventually they developed a way to do it on a road show, and they started building Cinerama domes. And here in Colorado Springs, we still have an old Cinerama dome. It's now turned into, I think, a church.
The one here in Hollywood is still the Cinerama dome. They have added on a multiplex behind it, but the main theater is still a Cinerama theater. I don't think it's a three projector Cinerama theater.
I'm not 100% sure. I know that still exists out there, and occasionally they revive these films. But Cinerama died eventually by the early 60s because it was a laborious process. If you think about it for a minute, you had three cameras you had to shoot. You had to worry about exposure, focus, framing for each of those cameras. Then when you were projecting it, you had to make sure all three projectors were in sync. If you had a film break on camera number three, you had camera one and two were still going, and then you would have to splice. And it was quite an ordeal to project and shoot. And so Cinerama eventually went away and was replaced by anamorphic, and that's where we get into the term anamorphic. And here's where we're trying to make it less scary.
Right. But before you do, there's a question in the chat room that I want to ask you. KM Black Bear is asking, why don't they just change the film size or the aspect ratio of the film frames?
Well, they could do that. And VistaVision, which I don't have a slide on that, but I'll just touch on it briefly. They actually ran 35 millimeter film through the camera sideways rather than vertically, sideways, so that it could expose more width. 70 millimeter motion pictures, which were popular during the 70s and 60s, actually 70 millimeter had a 2.20:1 aspect ratio on the film. So if you look at films like 2001: A Space Odyssey or Patton, they are, I believe, Sound of Music as well, were all shot 70 millimeter, and they have an aspect ratio of 2.20:1 naturally because that was the actual exposed area of the film. But just to give a little bit more detail without getting too techie here, the reason why they didn't just change the film is because you had, at that point, 40, 50 years worth of projectors and cameras already built. Nobody wanted to build new projectors, new cameras, you know, and they figured out this other way of getting widescreen images on 35 millimeter film, which we'll be talking.
That brings us right back to where you were about to go.
Exactly. And so real quick to kind of finish that 70 millimeter story, it's a great looking Blu-rays. It's a mad world was shot on 70 millimeter at a 2.20:1 aspect ratio with an anamorphic lens, which brought the aspect ratio in that film out to 2.76:1. It's insanely wide. If you pick up the Blu-ray of that, you want to see on a 16:9 screen, it's like a sliver in the middle of the screen, but it's an incredible image though. 70 millimeter anamorphic is what that was. So
okay.
Anyway, moving to the next slide. Here's anamorphic. And so here's the technology behind, you know, Panamorph's technology, like I said, the company I consult for, and anamorphic films. It's the same basic thing. There was an optical engineer in France by the name of Chrétien. He developed this anamorphic lens, and it would squeeze or expand light in one plane only. So where a normal lens would, you know, bring in light, you know, the same geometry horizontally and vertically, an anamorphic lens would compress the image horizontally or expand it vertically, however you want to think of it. But as you can see on the lower of those two images, the image that was stored on the film frame was vertically stretched, but we now expose the entire 35 millimeter frame. Every bit of film emulsion is exposed. We're now using the entire resolution and brightness capability of 35 millimeter film. So the cinematographer would see this white, would frame this widescreen image like you see on top. It would be compressed to be exposed onto 35 millimeter film using the entire frame. And if we can just go to the next slide, when you project it back, you just put another anamorphic lens in front of the projector in the opposite orientation, and it expands the image out by the exact same amount. So it's a way of getting a widescreen image using full resolution, full brightness on a 35 millimeter, essentially square piece of film.
So in other words, just let me summarize, make sure I understand it. Mm-hmm. The the image that the director wanted to capture was a widescreen image, say 2.35 to 1. Right. And so what they put an anamorphic lens in front of the camera, which basically squeezes the image horizontally. The film frame is in is exposed in its entirety. Its entire height is exposed and its width as well. But the image, it looks squeezed horizontally. Right. So then that film frame goes through the projector and the inverse lens is used to horizontally expand or unsqueeze the image. And we end up with what the director intended, the 2.35 to 1 image on the screen.
That is exactly correct. And when I do these presentations live, I will hand out an anamorphic lens and pass it around the room. And using just the panamorph lens that I bring with me, if you hold it in one orientation and you look at everybody else in the room, they look squeezed. And if you turn it the other way, they look expanded. So it's simply a matter of reorienting the lens.
Oh,
and
okay.
It does either an expansion or a compression, depending on how you have it oriented. And the early anamorphic lenses had geometric issues and all that, and those they became more and more refined over the years. And the original aspect ratio was 2.35 to 1, and that was CinemaScope. 20th Century Fox brought in this, the world's only anamorphic lens that existed from France. They literally had armed guards posted around. They kept it in a safe. And the first movie they did was The Robe, which was with Richard Burton. It was a biblical epic, and this thing, again, top grossing movie of that year. It's not the greatest movie ever made, but it was a spectacle. And Martin Scorsese talks about when he went to see the film. There's a documentary on the Robe Blu-ray. If you pick it up, it's a great little documentary about the history of CinemaScope. And he talks about how the screen would open and open and open and open and open and open. And it was such a paradigm change and how movies were projected. And again, got to keep in mind what I said before. The whole idea of widescreen is to engage your peripheral vision and to immerse you in the image. That was the goal. That was the
engineering. Yes, and in fact, you're answering Lawn Dog's question in the chat room, who says, those descriptions of aspect ratios are excellent, but which one looks more natural? And I think you've just answered that. The wider screen looks more natural, at least in the sense of being more immersed in the image, suspending disbelief that you're not actually part of the image of the movie.
Yeah, that's true. And it's interesting, some of the research I've done, why did they pick 1.33 to 1 originally? And I've never really found a good explanation for that. It was Thomas Edison and some of the other early pioneers that just landed on that. You know, it's close to square, but it's not quite square. And 2.35 to 1 was what the math happened to work out with the original anamorphic lens with 35 millimeter film and Cinerama. You know, you actually saw some even wider aspect ratios. Ben-Hur was also shot 2.76. So the experiment with all these.
What about Lawrence of Arabia?
Lawrence of Arabia, I believe, is 2.20 to 1. I have the Blu-ray. I have yet to crack the plastic off of it. I just need 4 hours to watch it.
2.2 to 1, it seems, you know, not all that wide. I always thought it was a very wide movie.
I could be wrong on this, and I hate to be wrong about a film as important as Lawrence of Arabia. I just haven't popped it in. But I thought, I could be wrong. Somebody might correct me in the chat room there. That was shot 70 millimeter, which, of course, was a higher resolution film format. And 2.20, important thing to think of, 2.20 to 1 is the exposed area of the film frame. However, most theaters were not equipped to project 70 millimeter film, so they would actually make a 2.35 to 1 print of anamorphic print of 70 millimeter film. So even though a film like, say, again, Patton was shot 2.20 to 1, the vast majority of the time it was projected as 2.35 to 1, and when the cinematographer was framing the image, they would leave a little bit of extra slop top and bottom so you weren't losing any critical picture information.
Mm-hmm. Vince360 in the chat room is saying that How the West Was Won, Cinerama, was 2.59 to 1. And I was going to mention that that was the Cinerama movie that really impressed me. I went as a kid to see it, and I was, my jaw was on the ground the whole time going, wow.
Yeah, I mean, we've all seen IMAX. We've all seen some of this, you know, some of these incredible new technologies, but I'll never forget, you know, like I said, 8 or 9 years old. I didn't see How the West Was Won in the theater, but I did see This Is Cinerama, which was just the travelogue. And I still remember to this day the screen opening and the roller coaster bit and, you know, literally everybody in the audience screaming, and it was an impressive experience. Mm-hmm. And the How the West Was Won Blu-ray is, you want an incredibly sharp looking demo disc, because you're looking at three times the resolution of 35 millimeter film, I guess, which is a high resolution format to begin with. And you can see, I'm trying to line this up on the monitor here so it's kind of right, seams where the three images were joined together. You can see that on the Blu-ray disc. They did a good job of trying to hide it, but you can still see the seams.
You can still see it, right. Okay, let's continue on with your lesson.
Okay, so we'll go to slide number 9, which is the common aspect ratio. There's a little cut off here, but 1.33 to 1 is the what they call Academy ratio. And as somebody said, or mentioning 4x3 needs to die. Well, it's we can't really kill it because we have all these great movies that were shot in 1.33 to 1. Just rattle them off the top of my head. Casablanca, Gone with the Wind, Wizard of Oz, the original King Kong. All these films were shot 1.33 to 1. And that was the standard up until the early 50s. And during the early 50s, almost everybody started switching over to widescreen. So 1.33 to 1 is still around, and still there's certain television shows that haven't changed over to 16x9 yet. But that's still, you know, that's not going to go away, because we want to be able to watch films in the correct aspect ratio the way they were shot. So 1.33 to 1 is the aspect ratio of all your classic movies. And then you have 1.85 to 1. I don't know. It's cut off on my screen. I don't know if it is there. 1.85 to 1 is another widescreen aspect ratio that's called Academy Flat. And that is in large use today. Now, if you remember, I said 16x9 is 1.78 to 1, where the screen's 1.78 times wider than it is tall. 1.85 to 1 is very close. So we can almost say 1.85 to 1 is analogous to 16x9. It's very, very, very close. This aspect ratio is used today, and about half of movies released are shot 1.85 to 1. And it's considered a more intimate aspect ratio. It's still widescreen, but we usually use it for more intimate character-based dramas where the people are the largest, loom largest on the screen. It's interesting. I used a shot from Spider-Man here. It's interesting that Sam Raimi, when he shot the first Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire, he shot at 1.85 to 1, thinking it was a more intimate character piece. And then all the sequels were shot 2.35 or 2.40 to 1 because those were more spectacles where you wanted to feel more immersed in the action. So it's an artistic choice, and it's important. It's an artistic choice. So films that are shot 1.85 to 1 tend to be more intimate dramas. All the Rocky movies are 1.85 to 1. The Godfather movies were 1.85 to 1. E.T., Saving Private Ryan, 1.85 to 1. But, like I said, half of movies released are shot 1.85 to 1. That's half of movies released. That's Blu-ray and theatrically. However, if you look at the top grossing movies of all time, and it's easy to look that up, you can look up the top 100 or top 200 online and IMDb and a few other sites. Over 70% of the top grossing movies of all time are shot in either the 2.35 to 1 or 2.40 to 1 aspect ratio. In fact, last year, I think 2012, every movie in the top 10 was shot 2.40 to 1.
So that obviously means that people really like it.
Yes, they like it. Most people, it gives a sense of grandeur. It's more of an epic feel. Again, if it's presented properly, you do feel more immersed in the image. And of course, the director has more screen real estate to fill with interesting things. And again, catching your peripheral vision is part of it to immerse you in the image.
Now, talk a moment about IMAX, because there have been several people in the chat room talking about the aspect ratio of IMAX. And we also have IMAX film, which is 70 millimeter, if I'm not mistaken, versus digital IMAX.
Yeah, IMAX is, I'm trying to remember the exact aspect ratio. It's almost like Academy ratio, more like 1.6. And the idea, because your screen is so large and you're sitting so close to it, the idea when they developed that aspect ratio, I think it had to do with a limitation in the actual film platters, because the film itself was so large, they had to lay them on their side. And the idea, since the film is so large, where the projection screen is so large, your entire field of vision is taken up, top and bottom. But if you look at most IMAX films, the area of picture interest is still more centered. They rarely use the extreme edges of the screen, top and bottom, and or side to side. So IMAX is kind of a different animal again. And there's also arguments, you know, just to be totally clear on this stuff. There's some people that argue that the IMAX aspect ratio more mimics where our field of focus is as human beings. So even though I'm talking about our peripheral vision is greater because we see things greater on the horizontal plane, where our eyes can focus best is still in this kind of more square space. So different competing philosophies, and without getting, you know, bogged down in a philosophical discussion over what's the best aspect ratio.
Right. But,
different ways of looking at it, no pun intended.
Now, Master Control in the chat room is saying that an IMAX negative is 70 millimeters by 48.5, which I just calculated to be 1.44 to 1.
Yeah, that could be accurate. I'm not going to claim expertise on IMAX aspect ratios. IMAX now, as you mentioned before, is kind of morphed into this digital IMAX where they're not really shooting with IMAX cameras anymore. And I don't know if the link is online. It was an interesting shootout a few years ago with, I'm trying to think of the name of the organization, but it's the Association of Cinematographers. They did a shootout between IMAX originated film and 4K DLP digital projection. And overwhelmingly, the preference was for 4K digital projection, even over this high resolution IMAX format. And this was a bunch of cinematographers sitting in the I might be able to send that link to you, Scott,
because if you can,
it was one of those things
do.
I had to dig it up and it wasn't in an obvious place.
The show, if you can do that, and I'll add it to the show notes. That's great.
Yeah, it was fascinating to talk about how even 2K digital projection, now years ago digital was nowhere near as good as film, but now even the cinematographers are saying digital projection is superior to even to like 70 millimeter or IMAX projection. It was an interesting shootout. I wish I had been there.
I wish I'd been there too. Taylor Karras in the chat room is asking, talk about the detail that can be captured with a wider aspect ratio.
Well, most of it is, again, getting the full resolution of the film frame is where your actual picture detail is going to come from. So by only exposing that middle area, that's where you would lose picture detail, like I said, if you just were to expose the center. They do that now with Super 35, where they will expose the center because the film grain is much, much finer these days, and they can get high-resolution images without absolutely having to use an anamorphic lens. But mostly it's about having that sense of immersion. And actually, this is when we talk about fixed lenses a little bit later. Most of our sense of picture detail actually comes from the vertical. It's how, again, human perception, we get most of our sense of detail from the vertical. Our sense of immersion comes from the horizontal. So that's kind of an interesting discussion, too. I'm going to hit a couple of those points a little bit later.
Well, yeah, let's get to that then. Let's continue on our merry way.
Okay, well, if we go from the common aspect ratio slides to the next one, which is home theater aspect ratios. So here's what our choices are at home. 16 by 9, which is 1.78 to 1. I use an example there, and it's kind of hard to see unless you look close, but a 185 to 1 movie on a 16 by 9 screen has very slight black bars, so slight that they're hardly worth worrying about. If you pan over to the other side of the screen, then there you go. See, I actually had to exaggerate the black bars to make them obvious on there. Because 185 to 1 is so close to 1.78 to 1, but there's very slight black bars, and many studios just end up cropping the sides of the image slightly, and you don't even have black bars at all. But then when you go to 2.40 to 1 movies, now, this is where it kind of gets important, you know, from my philosophy here. Remember that the 2.40 to 1 film was designed to be the largest content in the movie theater. It was designed to give you this immersive image that engaged your peripheral vision and kind of blow you away with the spectacle and the epic nature of it. And on a 16 by 9 screen, it actually becomes the smallest content. So it is geometrical it's completely opposed to what was intended by the filmmaker.
Diametrically opposed, I think the word you're looking for there.
That's the word I was looking for. Right. So
yeah, exactly. So it's intended to be the largest possible image, but on a 16:9 screen, it turns out to be the smallest possible image that you can get on that 16:9 screen.
Exactly. And if we go to the next slide, we kind of show that in the movie theater, and this is not always true anymore. It's kind of a sad state with the with these multiplexes where you have 12, 15 theaters in a space. But if you go to the larger, the premium theaters, and usually most even multiplexes have four or five theaters that have the largest screens. When you're watching a 2:40:1 film, they open the curtains or the masking panels, and it fills the entire width of the screen in that particular theater. 1.85:1 films are nice and big and impressive, but 2:40:1 movies are even more impressive. So that is the intention of the DP, the director of photography. That is the intention of the film director, is for that image to be larger, more immersive, more spectacular. But if we go to the next slide, when we take it home, you get exactly the opposite of what was intended. Okay. Now, I just want to say this because somebody might call, it was a blog, somebody pointed this out and I had a little discussion with them, that many theaters these days, the smaller theaters in the multiplex actually mask down 2:40:1 movies rather than open up the screen. And that is true. And the Hollywood filmmakers are not really happy about that. The cinematographers aren't.
But, in some theaters, you'll go to a theater and they have a 2.4:1 movie, but they're cropping it and only showing you 1.85 worth of that movie?
What they're doing is, and you can, next time you go to the movie theater, before the movie starts, you'll either notice the screen will either open wider, okay, trying to look at my image here, or they will mask down. They have masking panels that mask. So it's still going to be 2:40, but they have these black
vertical masking panels. Essentially, they're showing you letterbox bars in the movie theater.
Yeah, they're just masking them off so they're not obvious.
Right.
That happens. And so when you go to the multiplex, what I do is I say, what's your biggest theater? Because in the bigger theaters, they will open up for 2:40. In the smaller theaters, they mask down. So again, they're also violating the filmmaker's intent in certain theater chains.
By making the image smaller.
Yeah, exactly. And it's supposed to be wider and more immersive. So early on, and when CinemaScope was at its heyday in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, it was always, you probably remember, when the curtains would open, you would actually have curtains that open.
Sure.
Nowadays, it's masking panels. You can see it. Next time you go to the movie theater, you'll see masking panels come up or just open side to side or drop down. So the point is that immersive effect is lost for sure in the home, especially when you're looking at flat panels, a 50-inch flat panel or a 60-inch flat panel, and you're sitting 12 feet back from it, that immersive effect is totally lost at that point. So
Right.
So that's the widescreen at home. And so here we get into, how do you solve this problem? How do you bring that immersive experience into the home? And, you know, as we talked about the other day, there's a couple of different ways to do that. One is the anamorphic lens route, which is what Panamorph is all about. And then there is
the anamorphic lens from Panamorph and others basically is used on a projector, and so that goes onto a screen, and what you need is a 2.35 or 2.40:1 screen on which to project that image.
Absolutely. And so, just while we're getting the whole 2.35, 2.40, I just want to hit that up real quick.
Somebody in the chat room asked about that too. Why this difference?
It's 2.35:1 was the original widescreen aspect ratio of CinemaScope, and what they determined over time is that you could actually see the film splices on the edit points. And so what they did was they narrowed the aperture down slightly, and you ended up with a 2.40:1 aspect ratio. So basically that was an efficiency, an issue towards getting rid of visual flashes between the cuts in the film. And 2.40:1, it's a tiny difference, because we get that question at Panamorph quite a bit. Should I go 2.35:1 or 2.40:1 screen? And that's something that the Panamorph guys will happily walk you through, because it has to do with throw ratio and a few other things too. But it's, you know, you're talking about 0.05% difference in the width of the screen. 2.40:1 is actually the standard that's been used since about 1972. So from about 1972 to today, 2.40:1 is actually the correct way to refer to widescreen films. It's not a big deal. Even in the industry, people still say 235, even though 24021 is actually where it's been since the 70s.
Right. Okay.
So I'll talk a little bit more about that later when it comes to screen comparisons. But I just wanted to clarify that because it's not a big deal to worry about. 235-1 was the original. 24021 was to solve some technical issues with projection.
Got it.
So I can move on to talking about the different ways of doing it. Other questions you want to fire at me?
No. I think we're good.
All right. Next slide is lens memory. Now, this is kind of a cool way of doing ultra-wide films, 24021 films in the home that some projector manufacturers are adopting these days. Basically, what they do is they just zoom in the 16:9 image so that it fills a 24021 screen. Like you mentioned a little while ago, to do this, the first thing you need is a screen that's either 235-1 or 24021. And so how do you fill that screen? Well, there's, like I said, two ways to do it. Well, it's not always going to be the least expensive way to do it because most of the projectors that have the lens memory tend to be middle of the line and up. But this is a very simple way of doing 235-1 ultra wide. But what it actually does is it projects the black bars onto the wall. So
above and below the screen.
Exactly. So that's how I'm showing here in the slide. The screen, depending on how your room is set up and how you've painted your projection wall where the screen hangs, you may or may not see those. If you go on the 235-1 forum, you have some people talk about they have light-colored walls, and they can see because most projectors can't project, and that's kind of an oxymoron, project a true black. Black is the absence of light. Usually some light escapes. So you can kind of see those bars hitting the wall because they're not a pure absence of light. So
one reason to make sure that the wall behind your screen is dark or black rather than white or light.
Exactly. And so that becomes the issue there. A lot of people will paint that wall a very dark color. And that depends, too, on your particular setup in your home, whatever. Some people, spouse acceptance factor sometimes comes into it. Can I paint that wall black or dark gray or whatever? And just a little bit of projector 101 is for projection to work best, you really should paint the whole room as dark a color as possible because the side walls reflect light and all that too. But so that becomes an issue. The other thing about zoom is that you can do this with any projector, literally any projector. You could zoom in to fill the screen. Usually when you zoom, the image is going to shift up or down, so you have other issues. But the higher-end projectors that have this automatic lens memory will remember the proper settings, and they will shift up or down and the size of the image to fill up that screen. I'm going to be extremely fair, I believe, on the positives and negatives of both ways of doing it. The positive way of doing this, it's very simple. It doesn't require the purchase of an additional lens. Some people point out, too, that it's one-to-one pixel mapping. It requires no scaling, and we'll get into that here momentarily. So it's the image as it's printed, for lack of a better term, onto the disc, just as it's on the disc and projected onto that screen. On the negative side is that you're asking, all right, the projector is designed for 16:9. When you zoom it and it's letterbox, you already have 25% of your pixels shut off at that point to draw the black bars. You're asking the projector, which has 25% of its pixels shut off, so you get 25% of the light output already blocked. Now you're asking it to fill an 80% larger screen area. So the biggest...
It's going to be dimmer.
Generally speaking, that's true. And again, I want to be as fair as possible about this. While that's true, it's going to be dimmer. In most cases, it's appreciably dimmer because you're not using the whole pixel grid and you're not using the whole brightness of the projector. Certain projector models like JVC, for example, one of our good partners, when you zoom in, it also opens the aperture, which lets more light hit the screen. So
smart way to do it.
You will see people talk about in the forums when they use certain models projector, there's less of a light loss using the zoom as there might be. However, the converse of that argument is when you open up the aperture more, you lose contrast. So you're giving up contrast to gain brightness, which is kind of projector 101 too. Usually the brighter projector, the lower the contrast it's going to be. So the zoom method is absolutely a valid way of doing it. And you know, a lot of people are doing it, just judging from the traffic on the forum, and are happy with it. And it also depends on the screen size. You get some people who want to, I want to do 150-inch screen. It's like, okay, well, then brightness becomes really an issue, versus somebody who's doing 110-inch screen. Then it's less of a problem.
Right.
So that's kind of...
Okay, so zooming and lens memory is one way to go.
Right. And the other way to do it is the anamorphic lens method. And I believe my next one, yes, number 14, slide number 14. We'll bring that up. Okay, so here's the thing that's important to remember. When you're watching a letterbox movie on Blu-ray, you're not looking at a 1080p image. You aren't. You're looking at a 1920 by 810 image, because the black bars are hard encoded onto that disc. So when you're using the zoom method too, you're zooming 810 lines of resolution into fill the height of that screen. So 810p, maybe 817p, sometimes they fit in between. So instead of a 1080p image, you're looking at an 810p image, and that's the way it's encoded onto the disc. So what we do on an anamorphic system is we want to actually get rid of the black bars and light up the entire pixel grid to get back our 1080 resolution. So if we go to the next slide, just about every projector on the market now, thanks to our efforts and efforts of other companies like Schneider and ISCO, has this mode on it right now where it vertically expands the image. So now we're lighting up the entire chip.
This is actually a form of scaling in the vertical direction. Upscaling.
It is scaling. It's a 33% increase in the vertical to fill the entire imaging chip. So just this is why one of the reasons I talk about the history of film, because it's the same basic idea. We're going to, instead of wasting brightness and resolution on black bars, we're going to bring it back by scaling. Now, I want to be clear about this too, because this is something that people point out, and it's very true. Are we getting any additional picture detail when we scale from 810 to 1080? No, there's no additional picture detail because the black bars are hard encoded. However, we are using more pixels to draw the image. We now are using 1,080 pixels to draw the image vertically versus 810. And we're also using, probably just as important, if not more importantly, the entire brightness of the projection chip at this point.
The problem that I can foresee in this approach is that when you scale something, you're basically creating pixels where none existed before. And you could do that in a way that works well, or you could do that in a way that creates artifacts.
That's absolutely
true. It has the potential to create artifacts.
And that's absolutely true. And that's quality of this scaling is critical. And that's something that, you know, just speaking for Panamorph briefly, we've worked behind the scenes with the different projector manufacturers and also those companies like Lumigen that make incredibly good upward scalers, of increasing the quality of the scaling, because what you say is very true. A poorly scaled image will get artifacts. It's just like keystoning. Some people keystone their projectors and that can destroy resolution. So it's all in the quality of the scaling. Now, you are only scaling in one dimension only. Like when if you keystone, if anybody's familiar with that, you kind of change the geometry of the image like this. And when even doing 1% of that affects every pixel on the screen.
Right. And let me just quickly explain that keystone is a control that's in many projectors, and it is there in case you can't place the projector so that its lens axis, that is the imaginary line coming through the center of the lens, isn't perpendicular to the plane of the screen. If you're pointing the projector kind of downward or upward or from one side or the other, and it's not perfectly perpendicular, the image is going to be distorted. It's going to look like a trapezoid rather than a rectangle. And keystoning corrects that by scaling. And the problem is, as John, as you say, that affects every single pixel on the screen and really reduces resolution. It creates other artifacts. It's really not a good thing. I recommend avoiding it if at all possible.
Yeah, I ran a home theater company for a few years, and we only sold projection. That's all we sold. And I was just shocked at how many. There was a high-end company that was installing, and they would just slam that projector up against the ceiling and keystone the heck out of the image. And like you pointed out, it trashes the resolution. And And so bad scaling can be an issue. So most of the projectors that we, you know, Panamorph lens or an ISCO or Schneider, just to mention two of the other lenses on the market, are pairing with projectors that have good quality scaling, like JVC and Sony and Epson. And these companies, you know, pretty much all of them are using high quality scaling chips on there now. And like I mentioned, it's you're only scaling in the one direction.
Right.
And does it create visible artifacts? So that becomes the whole thing. And so that's something that can be rather easily determined by just engaging the mode and bringing up a fine detailed image and taking a look. So, mm-hmm. you know, our argument is it visible? Can you see, you know, because people argue it's one-to-one, you're losing the one-to-one pixel mapping. That is true. But how visible is it? And it's like when you get into things like high-resolution audio and all those things become somewhat controversial, and it's not my intent to kind of fuel the fire of those kind of arguments. But how visible is it? Argument is by not opening the aperture and losing contrast and not and also by allowing the full light output, which is a very visible difference in, when you do brightness comparisons. You get those gains. And then the other thing is that the black bars are gone. They're not projected onto the wall. They're literally gone.
Right. Okay, so vertical scaling gives you the full height of the imager, but the image is still squeezed horizontally.
Right. Everybody's too tall and skinny, which brings me to the following slide. And there's probably no surprise here. Once the lens moves into place, it just restores the image geometry. It's exactly the same technology. You know, it's simple physics there. You have an image that's too tall and skinny, and the anamorphic lens restores the correct geometry. And now we're using the full 1080. Yep, perfect. The full 1080 chip. We're using all the brightness output. The black bars are gone, so they're not being projected onto a wall. And typically, to hit the brightness thing, because if you go into 2354, you see all kinds of back and forth on this, and it depends on where the projector is mounted. Over the years, just testing all these things, typical brightness increase over zooming is about 20%. On some projectors, it's more than that. Sometimes it's less. Most people will say that the image looks more solid because there's more pixels drawing the image when you use a lens. So those mm-hmm. are the different ways of doing it. And cost-wise factors in, too, because, like I said, the automatic zoom units are usually in the middle to upper price ranges. So you kind of you need to balance all that out and figure a lot of people dip their toes in by doing the zoom method just to see, you know, they love it. And they may or may not feel a need at a certain point that they want to do the lens to get rid of the projection onto the wall or because they want to watch 16:9 that fills the screen and some other things as well.
Well, that brings up the next question, which is you've got with lens memories zooming, it's pretty easy to see. If you wanted to watch a 16:9 image on that screen, say a high def TV broadcast or something like that, you simply hit a button and the memories go back to the zoom settings that fill the height of the screen with a 16:9 image, and you'll have black bars actually on the sides. But how right. do you deal with that with an anamorphic lens?
Well, there's two ways to deal with an anamorphic lens. And if we can just go to the next slide, there's the movable lens, which is the next slide we'll bring up here. If I've got my water right. Yes, I do. So this kind of touches on something you just said. We're talking about constant height home cinema. So that means no matter what you're watching, the image is always of the same height. And you can see on this slide right here, and Sean, company guy who owns Panamorph, and I are huge Star Trek fans, so that explains the predominant Star Trek slides.
I am too, okay. So that's fine.
Most AVS people are, so I don't think they'll be offended. So 4:3 on the left. Is the same height, but it doesn't fill as much screen, 16:9, and then 2:40. And again, this is the artistic intent. And as my friend Josh Zyber likes to point out on the forum, Wheel of Fortune should not be as big as Star Wars. and he's got an argument there. Again, the intent of the filmmaker or the content provider is that 2:40 be the biggest, most impressive, and constant height cinema does that. So to go back to the original question, with the anamorphic lens, you move the lens out of the way for 4:3 and 16:9 content. There's manual and motorized lens systems from us and others. And so when you're watching 4:3 or 16:9, you just move the lens out of the way and you have your full resolution, full brightness, and it just doesn't fill the whole width of the screen. And you have black bars on the left and right. Some people use masking screens, so those gray bars become black bars. Some people use some very dark screen materials like the Black Diamond or the Stuart Firehawk. that give you almost absence of light on the left and right, so there's really blackout. And 240 is the widest. So the lens just moves out of the way for 16 by 9 or 4 by 3 content, and it doesn't fill the width of the screen. And, you know, that is the argument there is that is the intent of the content provider. So going to the next slide is a fixed lens.
Lens sled, as it's called, you can get a manual one, which wouldn't be that expensive, or you can get a motorized one that automatically moves the lens in and out of the light path, and that could also get a little expensive.
Yeah, the motorized ones are more expensive. It's definitely a convenience factor. As I mentioned, you know, the first thing you need to do when you're watching 240:1 content with an anamorphic lens is you need to get rid of those black bars. And that's where that scaling process, that vertical stretch scaling, where it eliminates the black bars and everybody looks too tall and too skinny. Most projectors have a trigger on there so that when you engage that mode and it stretches the image, it will trigger the lens to move into place. So
right.
It becomes an automated system. And then when you want to watch 16 by 9, you go back to 16 by 9 mode, the lens move out of the way, it turns off that vertical stretch scaling, and you're watching 16 by 9. So then
but
there's
if you
also
want to save some money. If you want to save some money, though, you could get a fixed anamorphic lens that always sits in front of the projector. And how does that then deal with 16 by 9 and 4 by 3?
Well,
keeping all of those aspect ratios at a constant height, which is really the goal here.
Yeah, well, that is the goal for somebody who's trying to get as accurate as possible. So there's two ways you can save money of the motorized sled. There's plenty of people on ABS forum have even post pictures of their manual sleds that they've created. Or you can do just companies like Panamorph sell manual sleds. But the other way, like you mentioned, is the fixed lens, which we can go back to the slide, which should be the one that was still currently up. Should be the fixed lens.
We'll get it up here in a second here.
Okay,
presumably.
I'll go ahead and talk about it.
There
okay.
It is.
Yeah. One back.
Thank you, John.
So again, we're trying to accomplish the same thing as we do with the movable lens. We leave the lens in place all the time. And the best way I like to think about, to me, the best way to understand this is when you buy a projector, it's a 16 by 9 projector, right? And 240:1 becomes your compromise format that uses less pixels and less brightness, okay? When you use a fixed lens, you flip-flop that equation. You've now turned your projector into a 240:1 projector, and 16 by 9 becomes your lower brightness, lower resolution source.
Mm.
Okay? So there's a couple of ways to go about doing this. A fixed lens, 240:1 is going to look the best. So for somebody who watches mostly movies like myself, that's almost all of what I watch in my theater. I'm not a big TV viewer, so I watch movies all the time. A fixed lens is a great solution because most movies are that you would own or rent or 235, 240. When you're watching 16 by 9, what happens is it's very simple. You engage the 4 by 3 scaling mode on the projector is what it's usually called, 4 by 3. And guess what? The lens expands the image by 33% this way. The 4 by 3 scaling mode compresses the image electronically by 25% that way. And 25% is the inverse of 33. They cancel each other out. So you end up with properly presented 4x3 and 16x9 content, even though the lens is in place. The geometry is correct, as you see in the image. It looks just like it does with the movable lens. However, you have lost horizontal resolution for 4x3 and 16x9 content. Instead of 1920x1080, we're at 1440x1080. And so
You're scaling there as well. So, again, you need to make sure that the scaling engine of the projector is doing a good job and not giving you lots of artifacts.
Exactly. And in defense of the fixed lens method, because that is true, you're giving up resolution in the horizontal. It's a 25% loss. You go from 1920 to 1440. But your vertical stays the same, 1080. You haven't lost the 1080. And as I mentioned earlier, and there's research out there you can read, research on there out there. Boy, sometimes I talk too fast. You can read about human visual acuity. Detailed perception is in the vertical. And we haven't lost any vertical resolution when we do the fixed lens solution.
Got it. We've only got a couple minutes left, and I want to make sure I get to this question because it's really interesting to me. There are a few movies out there, like The Dark Knight Returns or Dark Knight Rises, that switch. Chris Nolan, the director, shot some scenes in 2.35:1 or 2.40:1, and some scenes in IMAX, which is 1.44 or whatever it is, to one. So the aspect ratio changes during the movie.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And that is a common question that's on the forum a lot, and we get that one on the phone. Even though Chris Nolan shot the movie both ways, 2.35 or 2.40, and IMAX, his images are composed so the important visual information is in within the 2.40:1 frame, because outside of an IMAX theater, every single theater on the planet is showing that at 2.40:1. They're not. The only time it switches to IMAX is during an IMAX presentation in an IMAX theater. So the film, when it was composed, when the images were composed, yes, there's more picture information top and bottom, but what's critical to the experience of watching the film is in the center, is in the 2.40:1 safe zone, is probably what they would call it. So if you have an anamorphic lens system, that extra picture information is just cropped off during the scaling process. You won't even see it. Yes, you're losing some picture, but it's non-critical. However, when you're using the zoom method, when during the IMAX scenes, they will be projected above and below the screen onto your wall. So it's and you notice that too on a 16:9 flat panel, it's going to shift aspect ratio. It's the same thing with the zoom method of doing ultra wide. It projects above and below the screen. That can be distracting. So, and again, as some people have pointed out on the forum, we're talking about half a dozen movies here. You know, the vast majority of movies don't have this issue.
Yeah,
but you're
I
safe
understand.
Watching it just in 2.40 because there's no vital picture information top and bottom that you're losing.
Now, is there any way at home to replicate the IMAX experience where you actually see the aspect ratio change?
Well, the IMAX experience would be as if you had a huge 16:9. And it's my understanding, and I could be wrong, because IMAX is not my area of expertise.
Right.
That even when you go to a digital IMAX, it's essentially a 16:9 screen. So even if it's the IMAX segment of the movie being projected, it's still constricted to a 16:9 space. So having a really huge 16:9 screen would be the way to most accurately represent what you saw in the theater, because in the theater, it's switching between a hot, it's doing this back and forth between 2.40 and 16:9. And don't quote me on that. I could be wrong about, but it's my understanding digital IMAX is not using the 1.44:1. That was the.
No, I believe that's correct. I believe that is correct. But yeah, the only place to see that went during the movie, you actually, the aspect ratio changes from one scene to the next. The only place to really see that is in a true, I guess, film IMAX theater, one with a 1.44:1 screen and the ability to really go from one of those aspect ratios to the other. You can't do that at home, I guess.
I would guess not, unless you were going to. Yeah, I don't know how you would do it. If it is a true 1.44:1 exposed frame and they wanted to see all of that, you would need a 1.44:1 screen and some way to get that source. But it's cropped to 16:9 in the Blu-ray release anyway. So
right. Yeah,
it doesn't seem to be any way to do that.
Well, listen, it's been a fascinating lesson here in aspect ratios. And certainly those of us who are home theater geeks would love, at least if not already have, a projector in their house. And, you want to be able to replicate the director's intent accurately. And certainly the director's intent in most cases these days is a 2.35 or 2.40, really, movie, widescreen movie. And the way to do that is with a screen of that aspect ratio and either lens memories or an anamorphic lens. And I know that I've learned quite a bit today, and I hope everybody else has too. I want to thank you so much for being here. Stay on the line for a second, because we're going to talk about next week.
Oh, but, okay. Yeah. It's a lot of fun for me. Obviously, I love this stuff. I love talking about the history of film and all this stuff. It's fascinating to me.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for being here this week. You're going to be on next week, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But I do want to mention where people can reach you on AVS Forum. Your username there is your name, John Schuerman. Mm-hmm. Also on Panamorph.com, I would expect.
Yeah, if you write to Panamorph.com, or just John, J-O-H-N, at Panamorph.com is my email address. If you click on the link, it'll take you to the sales of Panamorph, and it can be forwarded to me, certainly, if you put my name in the subject or just mention it in the body, they can forward it on to me. But John at Panamorph.com or AVS, I get a lot of PMs and posts.
Excellent. Well, just to remind everybody, you can find me also on avsforum.com, and you can email me at scott@twit.tv, and you can follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott, also at avsforum. Now, you can also find previous episodes of Home Theater Geeks right here at twit.tv/htg, also on YouTube at youtube.com/twithometheatergeeks. Now, next week, John, you're going to come back and you're going to be joined by Sean Kelly, the founder of Panamorph, to talk about a new project that you guys are involved in, not having to do with anamorphic lenses, but rather having to do with wider color spaces and greater resolution, encoding greater resolution onto Blu-ray discs than we currently have, and hopefully this is a new technology that I'm certainly excited to learn more about.
Well, yeah, we have two different called next generation video technologies, and I'll briefly touch on them. We've actually, in the last couple of days, I'm gratified the amount of interest we've had from Hollywood and from some of the big CE manufacturers. Number one is deep color encoding. It's a system Sean has developed for encoding greater color bit depths, up to 12 bit depths or 12 bits of color onto an 8-bit medium like Blu-ray, which will drive the new high dynamic range type displays, give greater color resolution. That's backwards compatible with current technologies and very, very minimal overhead. That's deep color encoding. We're running that by through all the torture tests right now and talking to a couple of the majors and some of the CE manufacturers. The other one, and it's kind of complementary, it does peripherally involve with anamorphic lenses. It's storing extra vertical resolution for 2.40:1 movies behind the black letterbox bars so that it can be reintegrated into 2.40:1 movies. So just like we were talking about before, when you're watching that screen, the 810 lines, and you want to vertically stretch scale it, that it depends on the quality of the vertical stretching scaling engine, the actual resolution would be encoded onto the Blu-ray disc. And so it would be a true 1080p anamorphic version of the movie for those of us with 21:9 displays or anamorphic projection systems or 4K TVs for 2.40:1 movies that they could extract extra resolution for those films instead of being limited to 810. And that's totally backwards compatible with current Blu-ray as well. So both technologies are backward compatible, deep color encoding for getting extra color, bit depth, and dynamic range onto disc, and extra resolution for 2.40:1 movies too by hiding it behind the black bars. It's kind of an ingenious process that if you have the proper decoder, you can reintegrate that resolution and reintegrate extra color information.
Wow. Well, I'm fascinated about that, and I'm sure looking forward to talking about that next week. And I do hope that all of you watching now will join us for that. Until then, geek out.